In a world of conflicting values, where questions are more common than answers, God's Word provides everything we need to live a God-centered, truth-driven life. Join us now for the Word for Life, brought to you by Brookside Baptist Church and hosted by Pastor John Fallahy, as he shares the truth for the day.
Welcome to Word for Life. This is Pastor John Fallahy, discipleship pastor at Brookside Baptist Church on Pilgrim Way. And if you're ever in town in Brookville, Wisconsin, please visit us and say hello. We'd love for you to join us in our church services and come hear us preach the Word, and maybe we can say hello and spend some time in conversation. We're in the middle of Exodus chapter 6, and Moses began complaining to God about the response of Pharaoh when he requested to let the people go. And God is beginning to address Moses' complaint. And he's basically saying to Moses, look, I will fulfill my promise, but it's in my timing. But Moses, let me tell you more details about the plan. Let me encourage you and help you understand that there's more going on here than meets the eye. And so God begins to roll out his promises. Now we come to verse 10, and we begin to see Moses' reluctance. And the Lord said to Moses, saying, go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the children of Israel go out of his land. And Moses spoke before the Lord, saying, the children of Israel have not heeded me. How then shall Pharaoh heed me? For I am of uncircumcised lips. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron and gave them a command for the children of Israel and for Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Now the question is this, what do you do after you obey God and then don't receive the expected results? Are you like Moses and the Israelites? The first order of business is to complain to God? Or will you begin to look at yourself and excuse your failures? Will you begin to make excuses? I can't do this. I won't do this. Because maybe God has something for you to do and you just don't want to do it. And that's the situation we have here with Moses. God's allowed the complaint. He's encouraged Moses. He's laid out some more details to the plan. And he says, obey me now. Go do this. And Moses kind of is reluctant, saying, well, you know, I did it and it didn't work. And it's not me. Let's blame it on my uncircumcised lips. I can't do this job, God. I don't want to do this job. That's really what he's saying. Now, his answer is, I'm of uncircumcised lips. I am inept. I can't be effective with the lesser. How can I be effective with the greater? And this is really something we do often with ourselves when we fail. I'm no good. I can't do it. And we just make excuse after excuse for our failures. And God says, no, Moses, I called you. I'm going to equip you. I'm going to be with you. Now obey me. In other words, it's not up to your uncircumcised lips. I'm not going to accept any of your excuses. You're going to have to follow through on this with your uncircumcised lips or not. Question, has failure in your life led to doubt, to fear, or even an abandonment of God's calling in your life? The truth is, nothing in this life is worth anything unless there's a sacrifice connected to it. I mean, how often have you gotten something for free and later you discarded it versus having you buy something that costs some hard-earned dollars, and man, oh man, do you take care of that. It's like buying your first car. I mean, you wash that thing every day. You drive the speed limit every day. You keep the interior clean. You don't let anyone bring any drinks or food in the car. I mean, you care for that. But you go get a rental car or someone gives you their car and it didn't cost you anything, you're not as affectionate towards it. But failure and doubt and fear can lead to a desire to say, I don't want to do this anymore. And this is a bad thing. This is a dangerous place to be in, because when you abandon God's calling for your life, you also forsake the rewards, the discoveries, the intimacies with God. See, there's more here than meets the eye. This is not about Israel complaining to Moses, Moses complaining to God, and the Israelites not listening. There's far more involved here. They're going to discover who God is. Why forsake that? Think about the suffering that you and I go through as a Christian. There's a reward for us at the judgment seat of Christ. We're going to see him face to face. And I hope and pray that he'll say to you and say to me, well done, good and faithful servant. But those words can only be said if you've been a faithful servant, if you have not abandoned your calling. And thank the Lord he doesn't let us say no to the responsibilities and calling in our life. It's a dangerous place to be in rebellion to God. And so due to Moses' reluctance, God once again calls Aaron to assist Moses. And the application, I think, is weakness or failure does not allow one to evade God's responsibility. We think we can. Oh, I fail. Let's just forget about it. Move on. No. When God has a plan for your life, failure is no excuse. So the rest of the chapter is quite interesting because it's as if God is reaffirming and reestablishing why Moses and Aaron are the right ones for this ministry to deliver the Israelites out of the Egyptians' hands. And so God, in this text, brings forth the pedigree of Moses and Aaron. Now, it starts off with Reuben, the firstborn. These are the heads of their families, of their father's houses. The sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, were Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. These are the families of Reuben. Then it goes to Simeon, the secondborn. The sons of Simeon were Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. These are the families of Simeon. Then we come to the thirdborn, Levi. This is Moses and Aaron's pedigree, their family line. These are the names of the sons of Levi according to the generations. Gershon, Kohath, Merari, and the years of the life of Levi were 137. And according to Genesis 46, 8 through 11, they were in Canaan and went to Egypt. Now, the second generation is about 133 years. The sons of Gershon were Libni and Shimei, according to their families. And the sons of Kohath were Amram and Izhar and Hebron and Uziel. And the years of the life of Kohath were 133. The sons of Merari were Mahalai and Mushai. These are the families of Levi, according to their generation. So 133 years is shown here. Then we come to the third generation, and this is approximately 137 years. Now, Amram took for himself Jochebed, his father's sister, as wife, and she bore him Aaron and Moses, and the years of life of Amram were 137. The sons of Izhar were Korah, Nepheg, and Zikri, and the sons of Uziel were Mashael, Elzaphan, and Zithri. And then we come to the fourth generation. So it's fascinating to see all these generations being listed here. Aaron took to himself Elsheba, daughter of Amminadab, sister of Nahshon, as wife. And she bore him Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And the sons of Korah were Asir, Elkanah, and Abiasaph. These are the families of the Korahites. And then the fifth generation is included as well. Eleazar, Aaron's son, took for himself one of the daughters of Putiel as wife, and she bore him Phinehas. Now, Phinehas is a notable individual of all these names. Numbers 25:11, we learn Phinehas, the son Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, has turned back my wrath from the children of Israel, because he was zealous with my zeal among them, so that I did not consume the children of Israel in my zeal. Therefore, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace, and it shall be to him and his descendants after him a covenant of everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God and made atonement for the children of Israel. So one of the significant offspring of Aaron is Eleazar. Now, one of the things that is fascinating about studying the scriptures is the way it's structured. And there's what we call literary structure. And literary structure can lead us to additional insights. And there's some parallelism going on here. Let me try to describe this visually for you. So in verse 26, we read, these are the same Aaron and Moses. And if you can imagine in your mind it being indented, to whom the Lord said, and then a third line, indented even further, bring out the children of Israel, and in the fourth line, from the land of Egypt according to their armies. She has four phrases in verse 26. And it's in parallel to verse 27. These are the ones which are in parallel to the same Aaron and Moses. And then it says, if you can imagine this next phrase, indented, who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And then the third line, third phrase, indented once again, to bring out the children of Israel from Egypt. So by putting 26 and 27 in parallel, we can interpret one or the other and understand who the ones are. These are the same Moses and Aaron. The family tree confirms the identity of Moses and Aaron. And the family tree justifies the leadership positions for Moses and Aaron. God chooses both theologically, biologically, and genealogically. And this is really important. So when you see structure like this and you see these tables of names, there's more going on here than just a list of names. And let's not forget, there's a book of life. And if you're a believer, your name is written in that book of life, and your name will not be erased from that book of life. Your name isn't a book, just like their name isn't a book. And I don't want you to miss the significance of that. It's just so important. Now, all this is background. It's almost like a little stop in the story and the narrative. And then we come to verse 28. And it came to pass on the day the Lord spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, that the Lord spoke to Moses saying, I am the Lord. Speak to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say to you. But Moses said before the Lord, behold, I am of uncircumcised lips, and how shall Pharaoh heed me? And so in a sense, it's almost as if the author is saying, all right, we've digressed here a little bit. We've dealt with Moses' complaint. We've given you the promises, the plan. We're showing you the background of Moses and Aaron, why they have the right to be leading Israel. Now, let's go back. Let's not forget that they complained. God is going to fulfill his promises. Moses is complaining. He's reluctant to fulfill his calling. He's afraid that Pharaoh will not listen. And God says, basically, get back to work. The Lord will answer in the next chapter all these questions and more. But be careful, as an application, be careful with your excuses before the Lord. The Lord doesn't want excuses. What he wants is your heart and your obedience, for you to trust him in faith and to walk as he commands, both in his word and the way the Spirit convicts, and in your conscience, the way you're reminded to do these things. So as we wrap up chapter 6, these are some important thoughts. We come into the house of God. We worship. Moses comes before the Lord himself and complains. But God says, no, Moses, I've heard your complaint, but you need to obey me. You need to trust me. Now go back. Yes, the circumstances are going to be difficult, but be faithful. Hang in there, and you will see many more greater things. And so it's just such a great reminder that God is patient with us, and that in the end, God will accomplish his will in our life. And may he use you mightily to accomplish his work. Well, thanks for joining us in Exodus chapter 6. We look forward to rejoining you as we look at Exodus chapter 7. Until then, continue to read, obey, and pray.
We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast. If you would like a copy of today's program or have a question we can answer, please contact us at the Word for Life, 4470 North Pilgrim Road, Brookfield, Wisconsin, 53005. For more info about the Word for Life, to make a donation to continue this broadcast, as well as other resources for your Christian walk, visit us at www.thewordforlife.org. Thanks for listening today. Tune in again next time as we bring the Word of God to your life.